Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hello and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is the Martin and Ilya Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. This is our Friday news roundup, and we've had a busy week of news, so we've got lots to talk about. SCOTUS decision, Super Tuesday, California with all of its strange and new laws. So we'll be right back after these messages to discuss those things.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Welcome back. Victor, before we go on to the SCOTUS decision, I was wondering, we have the State of the Union tonight, so we're recording on Thursday, and I was wondering if you had any thoughts that you wanted to set forth before it, and I know that you and Jack will talk more about it. But.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go on Tucker's X account tonight to comment on it, and in general, they go on for an hour and a half, and then they're just a litany of all the things that a president does. And I'm not too cynical, but they're mostly lies. And they all do it. I'm not just picking on Biden. They just list half-truths of all the great things they've done. So in his case, it'll be a little bit more difficult because his current approval ratings range from 33 to 39. So 60 to 65% of the people don't believe what he's done has been any good. So he's going to go on there and tell them it's been really good. And that ends up in an Orwellian disconnect. And what would that mean? So he's spiked by putting some $6 trillion over 3 years into the marketplace at a time of increased post-lockdown demand and supply chain interruptions. Perfect storm that he exacerbated. And the result was in things like gasoline, rent, mortgages, staple foods, electric bills, healthcare, it's 30% higher. But people can't afford to buy the basic necessities. I mean, we're not talking about napkins or, you know, paper cups as inflated, although they are. We're talking about the things that people need, like meat and milk and eggs and things like that. And so he's going to go on there and tell you that, well, it's only because people are ripping you off, the corporations, and they're putting fewer things in the package at the same price. It's ridiculous. And the only thing he has to worry about is, for all practical purposes, the corporate boardroom is left wing. I hate to beat that dead horse, but Molly Ball's Time essay in 2021 laid it all out. What she called a conspiracy and a cabal to win that election of 2020 was a product, a dividend of Silicon Valley, Antifa, BLM behaving, the DNC censoring the news, the use of the FBI, that stuff. But central to it was the corporate boardroom. This is not the old days of U.S. Steel. It's Disney and Target and Budweiser, Anheuser-Busch. That is the new, and he's going to go after the corporate. Good luck.
Absolutely. Well, did you hear this Joe Scarborough just on the Biden issue? Is he a CNN announcer? I guess he is. He said, Joe Biden's at the top of his game intellectually and analytically, but I never heard anything so lowly as that. That is just...
I mean, that is embarrassing. He's talking about a president that thinks that Francois Mitterrand or Helmut Kohl are still alive. They've been dead for over a decade, decade and a half. And this is a person who shakes imaginary hands. He speaks a language that I can't understand. It's not English. It's kind of a slurry-ish. And it just, there's no syntax. There's no vocabulary. They've got special steps for him. He wears tennis shoes. I understand all that. But they understand he's a one little fall from oblivion.
Yeah.
And so Joe Scarborough knows that. But Joe Scarborough has a pathological hatred of Donald Trump. Just a hatred. It's kind of ironic because he used to be a Republican, I think, three-term congressman from Florida. He was very conservative. He wrote books, I remember, that you'd hear on the news peddled about the conservative way or how to be conservative. I'm not talking just conservative. I'm talking about MAGA conservative, ultra conservative. So what changed him being having to modulate his, he's on a left-wing cable show. So he has to please his masters. And he's had this third marriage with this Brzezinski, who's very left-wing. And then Trump in 2016, Joe Scarborough was criticized because as an old Republican, he had known Donald Trump for a long time. He found that he raised ratings, and Joe Scarborough on his Morning Joe show had Trump on all the time. Other Republican candidates complained and said, what are you doing? You know, you're giving him $1 billion. You're part of the aggregate $1 billion of free advertising that Trump got in 2016. Okay. Then he changed, and he started attacking Trump once he got into, is her name Mia? I can't remember what her name, Mika? That he was infatuated with his co-host. They had an affair. They left their respective spouses. They got married, and he went very hard left. Then Donald Trump, I think, as I remember, attacked him. Long ago, he was not even in the building in Florida, but one of his aides in the middle of the wee hours was working late and fell and hit her head because of a heart ailment. And there was an investigation, and they didn't really rule what it was initially. I think it was a heart condition caused it. So when he started attacking Donald Trump kept tweeting, needs to be investigated. Joe's aide, young, attractive woman, died in his office in the middle of the night. You know, that kind of innuendo, yeah, which he shouldn't have done, and which Joe Scarborough has never forgiven him for.
Yeah, kind of understandable.
Yeah, understandable. I mean, Joe Scarborough is Joe Scarborough.
Yeah.
He's not going to let it run off his back.
All right, let's turn to another topic then. The Supreme Court has ruled unanimously that the state cannot... And a state employee cannot decide that a national candidate cannot be on the ballot. So Donald Trump had a big win earlier this week, and I was wondering if you have thoughts on that SCOTUS decision.
Well, you know, the left immediately said that the three Democratic justices had some restrictions or concerns, so it wasn't 9-0, but they had no choice. Because they knew what would happen if they allowed this to happen. Then 16 other states would immediately have done that. And then you would be depriving, well, you would have 20, you'd have 19 states. You, depending on the relative populations, you could have almost 40% of the electorate would not be able to vote. It's the most anti-democratic thing in the history of the country. And the only way it would stop then if Republicans said that Joe Biden had violated his oath of office on the border, or they had said that he had taken money from a Chinese entity, or they felt that he should be subject to the 25th Amendment, and they weren't going to put his name on the ballot. You can imagine what that would do. It's not just that it doesn't matter in California that Trump, or Colorado, that he's not going to win, or Illinois, that he's not going to win. I don't know about Maine, but it affects the down ballot. So if you see that you're a MAGA Republican or any Republican and Donald Trump's not on the ballot, you're not going to go out, turn out to vote. If you don't turn out to vote, you're not going to vote for the Senate candidate, the House candidate, the local candidate. And that's the idea behind it. And this raises a larger question that we've talked about a lot in these podcasts, and that is, do you play by the Marcus of Queensbury rules and say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I will not reply to these people. They're juveniles. They're adolescents. When they don't get their way, they're like the kid in the supermarket aisle that, you know, goes into a fetal position, kicks, and the mother doesn't know what to do because he doesn't get his Cheerio box. That's how the left is today. So what do? You just ignore it? Or you say, now, behave? Or do you say, you know, I've seen this one time in my life in Palo Alto where the mother got down on the ground and started kicking.
No.
Yes, I have.
Wow.
And said, do you want
me
to do this too? And that really shocked this five-year-old.
Oh, did it?
Yes. So, and I remember at one
point.
Did
it work, by the way?
Yeah, it worked. I had at one point one of my three children mention a tattoo. And I said to them, I just want to warn you that if you get a tattoo of any sort, I'm going to get a barbed wire tattoo on my bicep. And I'm going to wear a t-shirt all the time around you. And you'll have to deal with that. And I don't know if it had any effect, but not one of my kids ever got a tattoo.
Yeah.
So that tit-for-tat deterrence, I don't know if the Republican just said, if you take his name off the ballot, then you better sue us because we're going to take Biden's name off the ballot. And I don't know where you go with this. I think if the Republicans take the Senate and the House and the White House, the first thing that the Senate majority knew, we don't know who it is say, we want to discuss ending the filibuster. We believe that the left was right, that it's an archaic, institutionalized, fossilized, ossified procedure. And Barack Obama was right at the, I guess he gave a eulogy for John McCain. He said it was a racist relic, even though he used it to try to stop Judge Alito from being confirmed. But if they raised that when they had the majority and they could then therefore get anything through at 51%, what would the left do? They'd go crazy. How dare you be like us? We're morally superior to you. We can use any means necessary because of our noble ends. You can. You're amoral. So it's an existential question. To what degree do you threaten the republic's stability by resorting to the tactics that they do and employ to stop them? Or on the other hand, if you're magnanimous, you just turn the other cheek and you think America's the Sermon on the Mount. Do they interpret that magnanimity, as I've always said, as weakness to be exploited rather than to be reciprocated? I have a feeling that at some point you're going to have to tell them, if you keep doing this, we don't want to do it, but we might have to go out in front of the Supreme Court and get a big crowd and threaten the judges by name in the way that Chuck Schumer did. We might have to have a lot of gun activists swarm one of the judges' homes and start yelling and screaming and right out front of the door the way the left does. We might have to have clerks leak in advance before a key election confidential Supreme Court, because nothing ever happened to the person who did it, apparently, about the repeal of Roe versus Wade. We might have to talk about bringing in conservative, you know, not Puerto Rico and D.C. Maybe we'll talk about splitting California and making the interior and the mountainous interior a separate state. It's very red. Maybe we should do that. Get two more senators and then see what they say. And we know what they're going to say.
So, you can't do that. You're destroying the Constitution.
You don't believe in democracy. Yeah. How dare you do that?
Yeah.
So, or they might have to, you know, get a very wealthy team of lawyers and say, you know what? We think for health reasons, people should get out and see each other on election day. They shouldn't vote mail-in, so we're just going to outlaw mail-in ballot unless you have a medical excuse.
Yeah.
And everybody has to show up with a valid ID. We want 90%, or the election's invalid unless 90% of the electorate who votes on election day.
Yeah.
How would they like that?
They're already casting the whole campaign as saving democracy.
Everybody's sick of that.
I'm tired of it. Donald Trump is a tyrant. He was much less a tyrant than Joe Biden.
And you know what's going to happen. Fannie Willis is melting down. Who will police the police? Well, who's going to prosecute the prosecutors? Because Mr. Nathan Wade and Terrence Bradley, I think his name is, and Fannie Willis have all lied under oath. And that can be determined in three ways. The inconsistency with her own testimony, the testimony of third parties, and telephonic electric records about where they were when they said they weren't. So they will be removed from that case. If they don't, then it's a joke. But I think they will. And any other prosecutor in any other county outside of the Atlanta area will not prosecute Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And I think it's going to be very hard for Alvin Bragg, if he has a jury trial, to convict Donald Trump on the words of Michael Cohen, an unknown felonious liar, and more importantly, to take a federal offense that federal prosecutors did not think was prosecutorially sound, then to, I guess, repackage it as a state offense in Manhattan. And Letitia James has been so high-fiving her win, and she's understanding that she took a consumer fraud case and then magnified it into, I guess, fraud because Donald Trump, she says, or Judge Ingeron.
Ingeron, yeah.
Judge Ingeron, without a jury present, says that he thinks that the Deutsche Bank, to take one example, auditors don't know as much about real estate as he does. So in his infinite wisdom, along with Letitia James, they've decided that Mar-a-Lago was not worth what it was and other properties. And therefore, Deutsche Bank and all these other banks didn't know, because they're stupid. They don't have this judge and Letitia James financial acumen. They didn't know they were being ripped off. They made a lot of money on their interest. They got the loan paid back right on time. They want to make another loan. They testified they had no problem with Donald Trump, but they were victims. They didn't know it. That's the argument. Yeah. I have to agree.
Bankers came in and testified.
Yeah, they did.
Donald Trump.
They had forensic analysts that testified. And the point is that everybody knows that you can't, if that stands on appeal, you have no system in New York, because any business that goes in there is going to think, wow, she's after a meat business now for selling too much meat at the industry. So if you go in there, you'd have to just say, okay, Letitia James, what is the cost of doing business? Okay, Alvin Bragg, what is the cost of doing business? Eric Adams, what is the cost of doing business, and have to write checks every year? And
yeah.
And it wouldn't work. So I think they'll have to get rid of that in appeal. I don't know about E. Jean Carroll, $83 million. Her dog was named Vagina. And she said rape was not an act of violence. She made an app about how to break up couples by lying about them, a little game, electronic game. She can't remember the dress she said. She said she can remember the dress she wore that didn't exist at the time frame she offered. She can't remember the year. She tweeted that The Apprentice and Donald Trump was her favorite show. She's only refiled because a left-wing guy ended the statute of limitations for a year and gave a window to refile. Otherwise, it wouldn't even have gone to court. There was no jury. There was a Judge Kaplan who said it was essentially he raped her, even though there was no finding that he raped her. Same thing with Letitia James. There was no, Judge Ingeron had no jury. So Fannie will, and then Jack Smith is chasing unicorns. He's going to say that this was an insurrection for what? He was never charged with insurrection. He was never convicted of insurrection. He says in front of a rally, go assemble peacefully and patriotically over the Capitol. Some buffoons riot. We still don't know how many FBI informants were there. We do know that the people arrested were not armed. You don't have an insurrection where you have a guy with cow horns and paint prancing around in front of the cameras and being let in by the guards, and the insurrectionists say assemble peacefully and patriotically. And then the five people died. Not one of them died violently, except one of the protesters who was shot while unarmed. Can you imagine if this was the Antifa? Let me give you another example. Can you imagine if when some protesters, anti-Israel charge, Representative Tlaib, I think, addressed them, they took over the rotunda? Same thing. And can you imagine if one of them, a Middle Eastern or a black protester, was shot by a white policeman as he broke into the rotunda or tried to go through a window?
That was already broken.
Yes.
Yeah, it was already broken.
And let's say that they said, you can't come in and protest, and they went through a window. Well, they were illegally protesting in the rotunda anyway. They got off. But can you imagine one went through a window, it was broken, and that person was of color, and a white policeman shot them lethally, and the person they shot was a 14-year military veteran. What would happen? Unarmed. I think you'd have a riot. You'd have a George Floyd riot. And that's what happened. So that whole thing is idea that he's an incident, it's falling apart. And how can then you, I don't think the, it doesn't really matter if Smith thinks he gets a sympathetic jury, but how can you say that Donald Trump feloniously remove classified files? He did. But how can you say he did when the president of the United States did it for 30 years, not two, in four different locations, not one, with no presidential prerogative to declassify them, unlike Donald Trump, and is on a tape 6 years ago admitting that he had in his possession unlawfully classified files, and he didn't notify anybody, and his ghostwriter got so paranoid 6 years later, he attempted to erase the tape, and Joe Biden's lawyers only came forward 6 years later after he had knowingly admitted it on tape, which he could have admitted at any time in the last 30 years. And then they said, Boy Scout Joe Biden just discovered that he had classified files. We, as dutiful citizens, want to report it, unlike Donald Trump. Subtext, secretly, we know that Joe's had them for 6 years, or maybe a tape floating around where he admits to them. Now we're going to come forward and fess up because he's going to appoint in 2 weeks a special prosecutor, they're saying, to go after Donald Trump. And we don't want to be with the same exposure as Donald Trump. So we want to say that we're morally superior. So we're going to preempt the appointment by 2 weeks and turn it over. That's what it was all. I just don't think any of that's going to stick. And if it does stick, it's going to help Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Donald Trump's big problem is not Joe Biden. The record is there. It's a disaster. Joe Biden is a disaster. Donald Trump's problem is unifying the party. To get the they have not won the popular vote, as I keep saying, 7 out of the last 8 years. They didn't win it in 92. They didn't win it in 96. They didn't win it in 2000. They only won it in 2004. They did not win it in 2008. They did not win it in 2012. They did not win it in 2016. I don't think they won it in 2020. And they've only won 51% since 1988. So that is the problem with the Republican Party. And Donald Trump, to break that cycle and get back to a 51, 53, 54% popular vote, has to bring in more people. He's doing it with blacks, Latinos perhaps. He's got to get suburban women, whatever you call them, swing voters, moderates. And the only way he can do that is take his medicine, call up Nikki Haley, say, Nikki, you didn't like me. I didn't like you. We said things. That's the way it is. But I did appoint you to UN, and you did do what I thought at the time was a good job. We parted amicably. I know you said you weren't going to run, and I forgive you. And I know you said you were going to support the eventual nominee, and you didn't. But that's all under the bridge. You and I have a lot more in common than we do with Joe Biden, and you have a career in 2028. And if you don't endorse me and I lose, they're going to blame you. And if you don't endorse me and I win, I'm going to blame you. But look at the other side. If you endorse me and I win, then you're in great shape. If you endorse me and I lose, you did your best. You're still in great shape. So it's a win-win for you. So I want you to endorse me. I want you to give your donors the green light they can help me. I'll call them up personally. But that's what he has to do. Mm-hmm. He can't just say, I trounced her, she's a bird. It doesn't work.
No.
This 2024 election is not about Donald Trump versus Joe Biden. It's about civilization versus chaos on the border, with crime, with energy, abroad, you name it. These are forces of Jacobin chaos. Yeah. And Donald Trump has a higher responsibility to everyone. He's got to say, I don't care if you're Republican. I don't care if you're conservative. I do care that you're for civilization. You're not for homeless people injecting, fornicating, urinating, defecating on the street. You're not for smash and grab. You're not for carjacking with impunity. You're not for shutting down the vast oil and gas reserves of the United States. You're not for what we saw in Afghanistan. You're not for the Chinese balloon going over the country. You're not for being quiet about the Wuhan lab and COVID. You're not for serial threats against Taiwan. That's what it's all about. And yeah. I think he can win. He can win big, but he's got to be magnanimous.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break and then come back for some talk of Super Tuesday. It just passed as well. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
We're back. So on Super Tuesday, Victor, Donald Trump had a big win. I know that. I was wondering if you had any reflections on did it have any meaning? It seemed like everybody expected this big win.
I wrote a column that came out on Monday, and I said that she would get out after Super Tuesday. I said that he had to, as I just mentioned, reach out and ask for her support, raise as much money, and he's in the driver's seat. So what does he do now? Usually the State of the Union and election year sort of I know Labor Day is the real campaign kicks off, but it's basically the beginning of the campaign season. He's got to hammer Joe Biden. He's got to offer a positive agenda, and he's got to round up these Republicans and get an extra 2 or 3% more than he did in 2020. He's got to get 4 or 5% more black votes. He's got to get 5 to 10% more Latino votes. He's got to get 3 or 5% more women. And how does he do that? He just has to give them a social and cultural reason not to vote for Donald Trump. So that when they go, if you're a moderate vote and your kid didn't get into school because he's a white male, or you are tired, you're commuting, you're tired in California paying $5.80 a gallon for gas, or you go to the store and a can of dog food's $2.50 that used to be 89 cents, you just say to yourself, I don't like this. And I haven't heard much, you know, Donald Trump, he's not what he was in 2016 or 20. He's trying to reach out. He's trying to do a good job. That's all he has to do. And they will vote overwhelmingly for him.
Yeah. After the Super Tuesday, I heard lots of chatter about Nikki Haley as a third-party candidate or other third-party candidates. And once again, Michelle Obama as the Democratic candidate once they got through their convention. But I was wondering if you have any, I know that's far off, but any reflections?
I think that they have been running the Biden administration. So their view is, we haven't left politics. We've been running the country for the last 3.5 years. So why would Michelle want to run? Because maybe Joe will win. If Joe wins, we're still running it from our basement. That's what we want to do. Do we want to get out there again and expose the Obama family business? No. Do we want people poking their nose into the $500 million we've earned for doing basically nothing? Do they want to look at our seaside Hawaii or Martha's Vineyard estates when we keep talking about oceans rising and swarming the beaches? No. We're wealthy. We've got to, and so I don't think, at one time I thought that she would do it right during her memoirs. And I said that. I didn't think lately she was going to do it. So what are they going to do? I kind of wrote about that on Monday. They're going to have a convention in August. And I think Joe Biden will go in there. And from now to August, I'm not even sure he's going to make it, but they think they can manage him. And then I think they're going to tell him that the delegates are going to be the superdelegates. I think the Obamas control the superdelegates. They're with ties to Obama. And I don't know whom he favors, but I think it's going to be some governor, and I don't know which, Josh Shapiro or maybe a Senator Amy Klobuchar or who knows, Gretchen Whitmer. I think Gavin, Gavin's had a bad season. Gavin got crushed in that debate with DeSantis. He got caught with a Panera Bread scandal where he was bragging that he was raising fast food wages to $20. Then we learned a little obscure clause said that one of his best friends and biggest campaign donors who has a fast food franchise that sells all sorts of sandwiches and things is technically a bakery and therefore it's exempt and it can hire cheaper labor. I think that kind of got him. It kind of reinforces the idea that he's a spoiled little brat that doesn't wear a mask at the Tony French Laundry and why he lectures everybody else does. So I think his kind of slick back hair, in your face, I'm the new face of the cocky, don't take crap off anybody, progressive new generation part, I don't think that's working. So.
You don't? I think he thinks it's working.
He always thinks it's working. Why wasn't his entire life has been subsidized by third parties?
Yeah.
And so anyway, they will release it and they will pick someone and it will not be Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
And she can't say I'm a powerful black woman that scares everybody and therefore they play the race card on me. No, they're just going to say we wanted you so much. We were just so disappointed that you weren't able to galvanize support. If you had, we would have had you as vice president again. And that's the argument that they're going to use. And I think it's going to be messy because as any time you get rid of Tom Eagleton 2 weeks after the convention because he had electric bolts going through his brain and everybody gets paranoid and George McGovern gets him off the ticket and he drops 10 points in the polls. Not that he would have won anyway. You get Ronald Reagan comes in with he'd won all the last primaries in 1976. He was the dynamic Prairie Fire candidate, not Gerry Ford, never been elected vice president, never been elected president, running for re-election. And they had a big fight. He came within almost, I guess it was 110 or something delegates of being president. The party was split, yelling and screaming at that. I remember that 76 convention. It was wild. And they never recovered. Carter, I mean, Ford clearly got beat as a result of that, partly at least.
Yeah.
So if they have a machination at the convention, and they will, I don't think it'll look good, especially in Chicago. Who knows what's going to happen in Chicago? If that border, I think one of the reasons that Biden is down at the border, he's thinking, oh, my God, Do I want to go to Chicago with an open border with the entire African-American community furious at me for privileging people from different countries over their own social needs? I don't think he does.
No. Well, since you mentioned California, there are some new laws in California that are interesting. Heather McDonald had an article in the Wall Street Journal that talked about the new California Racial Justice Act that was passed in 2020. So it's already passed, but it's set to begin next year. And it will make it so that felons who are incarcerated can have their case retried if they can prove systemic racism. That is, that their race is given a harder sentence than other races in that particular crime category. And I was wondering your thoughts because...
Well, as a general rule, California will always do something that is, A, contrary to its own interest and contrary to growing public opinion, because the legislature are Jacobin left-wing socialists, and there's no Republican Party. So this bill assumes right now that we have a low crime rate, that African Americans are not overrepresented in crime, as Heather McDonald, in some crimes like assault, 56 more times likely to attack somebody than a white person, 12 or something to murder than a white person, than to rape in L.A. County. But put that all aside, they're telling Californians who, by the way, just voted on some ballot measures to increase the police presence, to require drug testing for some entitlements. And to give more avenues of choice for police when they're making arrests without repercussions, because it's like Tombstone in San Francisco. And so in that environment, just expect them to be crazy. So now we are saying to people who have smashed and grabbed, who have assaulted, who have carjacked, who have raped, who have killed, did you do that because when you were convicted, did you feel that people were systemically racist and were supposed to think, well, let me think about that. Let me bring in, yes, yes, yes. And therefore, we're going to let you out? Is that the idea? It's just crazy.
Yeah.
But then there, I mean, 10 million people have left the state the last 30 years. A million and a half have left in the last two? And they're just passed a bill, it's going to be over 14% on the. They've taken the 13.3 top rate and got it up to 14.2. And what we need right now are millionaires to stay, because 1% of the population pays 50% of the income tax, and they're leaving. And so why would you hasten their flight by increasing the taxes on them? It's like saying, well, we have $73 billion in debt, so what should we do? Should we cut? Oh, I have an idea. Let's print $500 million and give it to illegal aliens for health care. And we've got an enormous opportunity because that crazy Texas Governor Abbott put barbed wire along this border, and he didn't want illegal aliens. And they're all coming through the southern border near San Diego. What a bonanza. So we need to help them by giving them free health care. As somebody who just went to a specialist and went into the waiting room where there was not one chair to be found, and people were elderly fighting over the one chair and arguing whose one chair that was when they got up to go to the bathroom, and the staff was snarly and the patients were snarly, and that is replicated as you walk through the entire complex. And as one person who a year ago went to the local emergency room for a very necessary treatment for an allergic bee sting and looked in, and there was not one seat there, and there was not one person speaking English, I don't think that's our problem right now, a shortage of undocumented people in our healthcare system.
No.
So California will raise taxes when you should cut them. It will print money and give it away as entitlements when it should be cutting to balance the budget, and it's headed in a doom loop. And that's why some of the Californians have voted for propositions. And we're racially divisive. There's no one particular group that's a majority. I think the white population is 38%, the Latinos 44%, the black population is shrinking dramatically to about 3 or 4, the Asian is growing dramatically, 16, 17%, 27, 28% of the population was not born in California. The last thing you need is a reparations committee, which we have, and a bill in the legislature to go back and give incentives that we have voted now twice against. We have voted twice not to consider race as a special criterion in hiring admissions, and yet they don't quit. It's going to be on the ballot again, apparently, or it's going to be passed by the legislature.
The only thing you forgot is they're also considering expanding zero-down interest-free loans to illegal immigrants.
They are, and that's not... I just bought a home in part for my daughter who moved, and I thought I was lucky getting a, I guess it was almost 6.5% loan.
Yeah.
Could I get a free loan? Get down to 1%, 2%? I'm a taxpayer. I pay 55% of my income, state and federal and Obamacare and payroll taxes. Property taxes, gas taxes, probably 60%. I've heard, you know, it's very funny. I've heard people talk, including myself, of leaving California that never have before. And it's like they were a little camel and they kept throwing these little straws. And finally, it's like a weight on their back. And they think, they start to dream. They think, this, given what I make, and if I just moved to Nevada or Arizona or Tennessee, this is what I would have for retirement. And then when they hear the attitude of California is, get out, you old racist, right-wing, white Christian male. We don't want you here. This is the picture of the future. You're just bitter. Get out. And everybody's saying, okay, and you're basically paying me to get out with going to a place where it's much less. And just, you know, it came up last night. I was on Sean Hannity's, and that it came up about the Jory Reid and the Jen Psaki and the Rachel Maddow comments about immigration. And they were reacting to these horrific stories of Lakin, the poor girl that was killed in Georgia. There was a young boy killed in Virginia. And they were making fun of it. They were saying, well, Virginia has a border problem, West Virginia. I don't know what that meant.
Yeah, I don't know what that meant
that
either.
Meant but they're not. Why would they care that somebody was killed in their state when they don't have a southern or northern border? Or maybe they think they have a border problem because they're next to poor white, what
West
they would
Virginians.
Call white trash West Virginian.
Yeah,
it was just incredible to watch those clips of $30 million for one day a week, Rachel Maddow and Jen Psaki in her $2 million mansion. And all that Wallace woman, all of these multimillionaires, all white, all privileged, and then making fun of people who are angry that illegal aliens have taken the life of these wonderful people, these little kid, a woman jogging. It's all back to Kate Steinle again. They believe in collateral damage. They believe like, well, you make a good omelet, you got to crush some eggs. So we got the open border. We got our 8 to 10 million new constituents. But, you know, that cost a few lives. Not going to cost my life because I live in a mansion and I have a big wall around it. I'm Rachel Maddow and I got $30 million. I have Herlinda doing my wash and I've got Juan doing my yard. They're nice people, but I don't get near the border. And I have a security and I have a bodyguard. That's their attitude. It's just...
It's appalling.
It made me nauseous. So I was on the show. I thought, God, I'm going to vomit just listening to the clips of these people. They're the most self-righteous, intolerant, arrogant, privileged, elite people in the world.
Yeah.
And they don't care about the damage they're doing to little people.
Yeah. Victor, let's take a break and then come back because Joy Reid said something really weird in that same session. So stay with us and we'll be back to talk a little bit about Joy Reid and then Victoria Nuland and maybe Elon Musk. We'll be back.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Welcome back. Victor, so in that same panel that they had, Joy Reid was on it, and she, you know, was warning against Trump, as always. And she said, Trump will shut down the DEI programs and universities, and that is all to get blacks out of universities. Can you imagine the assumption she has that blacks are not part of the instructors, but that they have all been employed at universities in these particular programs? It's incredible.
First of all, she's not a serious person. She has a long record of lying. Not that long ago, I think it was Charlie Crist was running at that time as a Republican. She basically attacked him as being gay. And then she made a whole Twitter stream of homophobic comments. And then, of course, when they investigated him, they found that unlike what she had alleged, they all say what they've been hacked. I've been hacked! You know, the ghostwriter to Joe Biden, when he erases subpoenaed evidence of a conversation in which Joe Biden says that he has cloud, I erased him because I've been hacked. Yeah, that's just a joke. And so she is on record of being an intolerant, homophobic, and she's a racist because she collectively always talks about white people collectively, 250 million people as collectives. And when she was talking about immigration, my eyes just about bulged out because I thought, well, wait a minute. The angriest people about open borders are black people in New York and Chicago and Philadelphia and Los Angeles. And just listen to them. Are they racist? And so, and then she's always talking about cultural appropriation. This person is trying to act like they're black. This person is doing shouldn't be in a black. And then she dyes her hair blonde. I have no problem with that. But she has a problem with a blonde wearing dreadlocks. And I can tell you that I wrote that in one of the on the paywalls of our website, Blade of Perseus. I went back, you know, and she has a long record of talking about hairstyles as proof of one's ethnic authenticity. And she said that she is going to wear ethnic hairstyles. So as a statement, you know what I mean, about being black, and everybody should wear their own hairstyles. And then what does she do? She wears a blonde hairstyle, and then she attacks white people for cultural appropriations. And I don't know what else to make of this, that blacks, that you vote for Donald Trump and you're voting really not about the open border, not about the economy, not about foreign policy, not about energy, not about crime. You're voting to deny black people their presence in the university. Go on the webpage of where I work. It's 67% of the country is white. There's 20%, 21% white let in. And you look at the rubrics of black, Latino, Asian, they're all over, if you use the left's word, overrepresented. And they have been for 3 or 4 years. So nobody wants blacks to get out of the university. All they want to do is the following. They want to reinstate merit. So if you're a black student and you are applying, you have a tripart admissions. You have your grade point average, you have your SAT score, and you have your extracurricular activities. Traditionally, people said, we'll evaluate your GPA in terms of how rigorous the curriculum was at that high school. We'll look at the SAT. And they gave some leniency toward blacks, about 200 points on the SAT. And then they would look at the third category. Did they have a single parent home? All of that. And that's out the window now. That was the reasons that they upped the black percentage in most universities to 12%. Even though on a strictly grade SAT, it would probably have been about 2 or 3%. But then after George Floyd, it became repertory. We're going to have reparations, so we're going to let in 15, 16%. Okay. So she's angry that that might be in danger. But notice what she never says. She never says this. I'm a very proud black person, and I know that we can have the same SAT scores and the same GPAs as whites, Latinos, Asians. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to tutor my own children, and I'm going to make sure that they look at academic progress the same as they do other pursuits in which they excel, entertainment, sports. And there's a lot of upper middle class blacks that do that. And then she should say, on a policy initiative, I want to go in and get charter schools and parochial schools and get rid of this woke stuff that all it does is reinforce a lack of confidence. So when you don't do well on a math test, somebody says the math test is racist rather than you didn't do well this time because you haven't had the training of somebody in Atherton. But I can guarantee you, I can give you that training. And next time you're going to do as well because this is what we're going to do. But to do that, she would have to be attacked and criticized, and not demagogue. She would have to be called an Uncle Tom, acting white. The whole culture that appears in, say, rap music, you know, you would object to calling women whores and bitches. You would object to threatening the police with bodily injury in your music. You would go back and say, on a Saturday night, it's not guns that are killing people, illegal though they are. It's blacks killing blacks because of culture that we've inculcated of machoism. And that they don't want to touch that. They being left-wing people of color in these high media positions. So she just demagogues.
Yeah.
Joy Reid has her little antenna out, and she, like all of these cable TV, she knows what she can and cannot say. She has a blank check to say that all the white people collectively are racist, and she will not be taken off the air. There is a difference. Before someone in the audience says, well, wait a minute, Fox has rules too. No, they don't in the same way. If you are on Fox and you collectively say that black people are racist or something collectively, you're going to be off the air. And there's a wide difference of opinion, it seems to me, if you looked at the old lineup, Tucker Carlson versus Sean Hannity versus Laura Ingraham versus Martha McCallum versus Neil Cavuto versus
Brett Baer.
Yeah, there's a difference of opinion. Not with those people. They're just straight party line. And if you deviate, but she know her antenna tell her that she is free to make fun of people, be inconsistent, stereotype people, and generally contribute to a sense of edginess, tension in racial relations by which she exploits. So she's in a situation where even if she doesn't say things that are very intelligent, and she doesn't, even if she tweets and in a very homophobic fashion, and then she lies publicly and says that it was hacked when an investigation shows that it was not. She doesn't apologize. She says, well, that was from an earlier me, or I don't know, I don't know what happened. Nobody else gets that leeway. And yet, given that magnanimity and leeway, what does she do? She doubles down. And it really tells you about human nature. The more you get rid of deterrence, and the more you do not hold everybody, regardless of their class, their race, their gender, sexual, when you don't hold them to the same standard, then you get the chief diversity officer at Columbia or the DEI extension officer at Harvard or Claudine Gay then doing what? Plagiarizing because it's a shortcut to career success and you think that no one in their right mind would ever call you on it and incur the charge of racist. That's why the whole DEI is doomed, not just because They commit acts of commission by hounding people like commissars, and not just because they commit acts of omission, they waste precious hours that could be given over to instruction, but because there's no deterrence, and they're going to do it again and again and again. As long as you exempt an entire group of people, kind of like white Southern politicians in small towns in Georgia and Alabama and Mississippi in 1938, 40, they could do almost anything they wanted in terms of race and get away with it. And they did.
Well, Victor, let's look at it since this end of this. Another woman, Victoria Nuland, who was is currently the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, and she has just decided that she's going to step down from that position. She was a staunch supporter of the Ukraine war, and it's interesting that in this campaign year, maybe a lot of people do this, she does step down. I know she's worked for both the left and the right. And I was wondering if you had any thoughts on Victoria.
I have to be careful about that because one of my closest friends for 20 years was Donald Kagan. He was a professor, as we all know, at Yale University in the classics department in history. He was one of the few conservatives on the Yale campus. He was even an athletic director for, I think, a two-year stint. He wrote a monumental four-volume history of the Peloponnesian War, which was in the grand tradition of narrative history. It's kind of been added to, updated by a student of his, Paul Ray, that wrote another, is in the process of a seven-volume history of the Peloponnesian War. And he had two sons of whom I knew, Fred Kagan and Bob Kagan. Fred Kagan runs the Institute on War, and that has offered, it has an ideological neoconservative bent of interventionism, but it does provide a valuable service in giving you hard data about current wars. So if you want to know where the battle line is today, or you want to see an interactive map, or you want to see a reasonable disinterested tally of comparative casualties, they will offer it to you. Robert Kagan was a strong conservative at one time. He worked with Elliot Abrams in Nicaragua. He wrote a big, massive volume about his experiences in Nicaragua. He's written a number of very well-received and popular books. The one Paradise and Power, that the Europeans were from Venus and we're from Mars, et cetera, et cetera. And then he went to the Brookings Institute. He slowly gravitated. He was a Washington Post. If you're working for the Brookings Institute and you write for the Washington Post, there are certain parameters that are conducive, that it's hard to be a conservative. And I think he married Victoria Nuland, who at one time worked for Dick Cheney. She was conservative. And then she worked with Obama, and I think that team gravitated to the left. But that's irrelevant. She's a bête noire of the right because there was an intercepted series of phone calls and admissions that in 2014 she intervened in the election and advocated. And we get you got to remember that she was one of the very many people that were mentioned as interested in disseminating the charge of Russian collusion in 2016. So it would be very ironic that she allegedly got involved in the foreign affairs of a different country in a way that she would very much resent Russia doing to us. Supposedly.
Yeah, you mean Ukrainian elections.
Yes.
So she's trying to intervene. She tried in 2014.
She did. Yeah. She urged that the people throw out the Russian sanctioned candidate who won an election, stage a revolution, and put in what she thought was a more authentic pro-Western candidate as part of a larger project of bringing Ukraine into NATO and westernizing the country. And that was not going to be palatable to Vladimir Putin or the Russian people. And so she's been severely criticized. So why did she step down? She stepped down because I think the grand visions, and if anybody's interested, I had a long hour interview with Goodfellas with three of my close friends at the Hoover Institution. Neil Ferguson wasn't there, but John Cochran and H.R. McMaster were. And we politely disagreed in some areas on Ukraine. I believe we should give enough to defend their territorial integrity, but not enough to continue an endless war and hit targets inside Russia. And I think they disagreed with that. But that was her position, and she was very confident. If we had this conversation, and we did, Sammy, in March and April and May of last year, we were told that the spring offensive would be a World War II blitzkrieg, that with Challenger and Leopard and Abrams tanks and HIMARS and sophisticated drones, there were going to be a pincer movement. We're just going to go straight in, maybe, and break through this weird, 600-mile Maginot Line the Russians had built of fortifications and tank traps and landmines and kill zones with artillery and surveillance and heavily fortified, heavily manned. And I never understood the logic that a country who had at one point 43 million people and now has about 34 million, 10 million refugees have left, and they can't get people to get in the military. What in the world are they doing attacking fixed fortified positions when the country they are attacking has almost four times now the population, 10 times the GDP, 30 times? But they did. And yet the whole left wing's, oh, they're being advised by NATO's most sophisticated advisors. They've got close air to armor coordination. They're not using outdated Russian tactics. We've got the best, and they were like a ram that went against a cement wall for 6 months. The spring offensive went for 6 months. And yes, they killed a lot of people, many in the Wagner group, but they can't afford to have even a 3-to-1 loss rate. And so it fizzled out. And so now we're in, as I said, a Verdun-like situation where the war has been going on. Verdun went on for 10 months. 10 months in Verdun.
Yeah.
February to December of 1916, 108 years ago, and what happened at the end of Verdun? The French were where the French were, and the Germans were where the Germans were. They shall not pass, all of that glorious stuff. You go to the ossuary at Verdun, it's very tragic to see that. 700,000 dead and wounded. And guess what? In August, a group of various institutions suggested that there had been 600,000 dead and wounded Russians in Ukraine. That was in August. Now we're September, October, November, December, January, February, March. You add the 8 months and you prorate it, given what we've had up to that point, and you're up to about 800,000. So we've had 800,000 dead and wounded in this war with no end in sight, and people like Victoria Nuland don't seem to ever be self-aware that they were championing a breakthrough spring offensive that should have never been envisioned. What should have happened was the Ukrainians should have taken the Russian thing and done the same thing on their side and said, we're never going to spend the manpower and blood and treasure to get back the Donbass and the Crimea. We haven't had them for 10 years. And Obama lost them, and Trump didn't try to get them back, and Obama didn't try to get them back, and Biden didn't get them, and they didn't get them back because they're too problematic. They've been Russian for years. They have Russian-speaking majorities, and they're not going to get back. So we're going to make a Maginot Line of our own, and we're going to get them back to February 20th, but we're not going to waste precious manpower in sending armored columns against fixed positions. And yet they did. And there's still talk here. And so I think she was an architect of on to Moscow type theories.
And she's just giving up now by leaving?
I don't think she's giving up. I think the Biden administration is telling people, do not reply to Russian aggression. Give them enough to we're very worried about a theater-wide war in Ukraine. And we gave them enough not to lose, but enough not to win. And now we want all the people of the Onda Moscow school of neoconservative interventionism out. Mm, or at least we don't want them during the campaign season. And I think they've said the same thing about Iran. We'll do a little And this is very different in Iran, a tit for tat, what we do not want, and we'll take some casualties. They can hit us 120 times, but we won't reply because we do not want a theater-wide war during the election year. Because it gives a sense of what happened to Jimmy Carter when he said he had no inordinate fear of communism, that the Nixon administration, the Ford administration, Kissinger had been provocative. Peace. Jimmy was going to show everybody that he was better than everybody else and that they would reciprocate in kind. And then, you know, the Iranians took the hostages. The Russians went into Afghanistan. The Russians put missiles threatening, and we know how that went.
Yeah.
And so basically it is, we don't want a war on our watch. And if Trump wins, then he's going to have to deal with all the loss of deterrence that we insured.
Yeah. Well, Victor, we're at the end of our show here, and I have a observation by one of your listeners, and it's outside. It's from Canada, and it's titled Canada Calling. This show is fantastic. Krauthammer was one of the best, but VDH is the greatest. Up here in Canada, we don't really have a conservative media, let alone a conservative thinker we can listen to. People need to understand both our countries are going through the same issues. If the left is successful in their agenda, then the world as we know it is over. VDH brings his knowledge of ancient societies to the forefront for us. We must understand history to survive. Thank you.
You know, I was just going to add a final footnote to Victoria Nuland. Just before she left, so did John Kerry. Remember, he was climate czar, 79-year-old John Kerry, and he flew around the world, and he was criticized for using his wife's family jets, and he made that stupid remark that he had to get to places quickly to save the planet. Well, they didn't want him around either, because he was the one that had pressured them to outlaw combustible engines in 10 years and mandate EVs, and now they're all sitting in lots and can't be sold. People are revolted against them. They're angry about outlawing natural gas stoves. But there is a connection. He weighed in the other day. Did you know that, on Russia?
No.
And you know what he said? He said, well, you know, if they have the ability to go in and screw up a country and invade and cause, they have the ability to reduce emissions. So why don't you just reduce your emissions, and then we'll like you, and and you'll save the planet. And what you're doing, you know, I'm sorry that, you know, 200,000 Ukrainians have died and been wounded, and that's a little, I'm sorry you mussed up our hair, to quote Dr.
Strangelove. Yes.
You know, I'm not saying Russia didn't muss up some hair, but you have a real chance to be an avatar of climate change. And if you did that, you would win public approval. So they'd say, well, if it's a question of killing 800,000 people in an endless optional war versus cutting back coal emissions, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. He said, I believe that Russia has the ability to be able to make enormous changes if it really wanted to. I mean, if Russia had the ability to wage a war illegally and invade another country, then they ought to be able to find the effort to be responsible on climate change. They gave the good old college try killing people. All I suggest they do is give the good old college try and reduce smoke.
Yeah, and the answer to that is, if they were so going to go on those lines, then they would not have Vladimir Putin as their leader. What they like is a strong man and a good war.
You can say a lot of things about the Ukrainian war, and I had a long discussion in Goodfellas with my close colleagues, and I respect their views, and we had some honest back and take. But you can't say that this is not moral callousness to look at that Verdun-like wastage of human potential and all of that bloodletting and that deadlock, and then take that and transmogrify it into climate change.
Yeah.
It's pathetic.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, Victor, we're at the end of the show, so thank you very much for all of your words of wisdom today and all your observations.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.